Hey everyone! We are proud to announce this week's episode is sponsored by Notion. If you're an avid listener of Techish, you'll know how much we love this product. So much, in fact, people have thought that we were sponsored by Notion years ago.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is one tool to get your entire team or company or class to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks.
We even use Notion to manage this very podcast, from writing and sharing our show notes, to organizing live events, to sales. And because it's centralized, it even serves as a giant wiki. So onboarding new talent and getting them up to speed on all things techish is so simple. You can say goodbye to random Google Docs and all the 20 different tools you're using to manage your business or your project. Work together with dozens, hundreds, or thousands of your teammates in one place.
And if you're a productivity nerd like me, use it for your personal life to track your workouts, reading lists, and favorite quotes. So what you need to do right now is sign up with a link in the show notes to get your account and say hello to the future.
Hey everybody, welcome to a new episode of Techish. It's your co-host, Abadesi of Hustle Crew and Brandwatch.
And Michael Bain of POC in Tech in the building. I was waiting for how many things you had. I don't know how many jobs you had, so I was giving you a pause. Where'd Michael go? Disappeared. All right, cool. You know what? Yeah, I want to talk about the Expensify CEO. So you brought this up to me. So you want to give background to anybody who don't know what's going on here?
Wow. Okay. So rewind a few episodes. We were talking about the Coinbase founder stepping out and being like, leave politics at home. I don't want your Black Lives Matter in the workplace. Lo and behold, it's a Monday. I'm checking my Brandwatch email. We use Expensify as our expense approval software. And I see this email from the CEO and it's just like, oh, interesting. What's this about? And he's written this really long letter about how a vote for Trump is a vote against democracy. You have to vote for Biden. It isn't even about whether or not you like Biden. It's about protecting democracy, the democratic system. It's this incredible letter. And then it's even got a Q&A. It's got an FAQ. Like, oh, why is this an attack against democracy? Like, oh, what if I don't like this? Or like, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, this guy took the time to do a little mini essay to stand up for what's right. And I have a lot of time for that.
So he sent it to every single one of his employees and his customers, basically.
10 million customers, I think. Yeah. Wow. This guy just went out. He was just like doing it. I was like, wow, I'm actually getting some good vibes from the tech industry today. It just never happened.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think he's put some skin in the game because he could potentially lose a lot of clients. Who is Trump's fan base? There's a lot of rich people that are Trump's fans because he's promising to cut taxes. So, you know, you could jeopardize your business. It's not like me and you doing it. If me and you did it with our businesses, obviously it's going to be like, yay. Like, we're not really taking that much of a risk considering who our audience is. Mm-hmm. But if you're like, you know, a generic SaaS software company, you've got clients across the board, right? And I don't know the dude's name, but shout out to the CEO of Expensify. I rate it, man.
Oh, like, Joe, let's say his name. David Barrett.
Cool. So shout out to David. Keep doing your thing. Sticking to politics, actually, the funny story that I saw, what's not funny, I found it humorous, but it isn't funny, is 50 Cent came out. I think someone sent him a screenshot of Joe Biden's proposed tax increases. And I think it said, like, if you're in New York, combining all of like state, federal, local taxes, you end up paying like 62% if you're in the higher income, above like 400K. I don't think that's actually particularly accurate. I think it's a propaganda term because obviously tax rates are banded. So if you earn over a certain amount, that's taxed at the higher level, not the whole amount. But anyway, 50 was like, what the hell? Hell no, I ain't paying that. And he was like, and he quoted a saying, I'm not trying to be 20 Cent, which made me laugh. Okay, that's the funny part, right? And he came out and was like, you know, I'm riding with Trump. He's since come back out and retracted it because I think the backlash has been quite significant. But you know what? Capitalism is a hell of a drug because it's one of those things where, okay, you know what? To a certain extent, that's the Trump supporter that I understand. What I mean by that is, if you're somebody who's like, I'm only thinking about my financial interest, and listen, don't get twisted, rap music has been teaching us for years.
Yeah.
It's all about the back. They're self-interest capitalists. Like, I know we don't want to acknowledge that, but rap music is a highly individualistic, materialistic, capitalist commodity right now, yeah, especially the content they spew. So why should we be surprised when a rapper comes out and says, I'm trying to look after my bottom line, right?
Get rich and die.
Literally, and I can not respect it. I don't respect it, but I can understand the logical steps. I want to protect my money, therefore I'm voting B. What I never really understand are people who are poor voting for parties that are essentially against their economic interests, but they vote for them because they don't like brown people, or they've been convinced that immigrants are out to hurt them, or whatever it is. And I'm like, you're a fool. And I know that's a very elitist thing to say, but I'm like,
fam,
you vote, it is elitist, but I'm just like, I don't understand. Like, brown people, immigrants, we're not here to hurt you. Like, you're siding with your, not oppressor, but you're siding against your own economic interests. You don't want healthcare because you're afraid of brown people. Get the hell out of it. But with 50, it's still abhorrent because it's still a very selfish decision, but I can at least understand the mapping of A to B. 1 + 1 = 2. I want my money.
You right, just let him off because you like his music.
No, like 50 fell off a long time ago. 50 fell off a long time ago, and I have a whole different critique on it in terms of that kind of selfish thinking isn't the way forward. That's not going to uplift anybody, right?
Well, first of all, I have 21 questions for 50 Cent.
Oh, here we go. All right, drop a bomb for that one. Drop a bomb right there. Go on.
You're saying, why don't people have the ability to vote in a way that favors their economic status? Like, why? What's the benefit in you voting for less tax when you need public funding to get access to healthcare and all this kind of stuff? And I think one of the flaws in that argument is that you've grown up in the UK, which is a welfare state. And in the US, while there is welfare, like unemployment checks and all that kind of stuff, there isn't public funding towards basic needs the way there is over here, you know, whether that's healthcare, whether that's whatever. So there's still quite an alien concept. Like, people don't understand where taxes go. They don't feel like taxes are going anywhere. And I think that's just like one of those kind of like cultural nuances that we have to bear in mind.
I think you're right. I think that's a good point. It's just interesting because I think capitalism is, like I said at the top, it's a hell of a drug. Like, here's an example, it's an anecdote that I have with a friend of mine. He probably doesn't listen to the podcast, so I can say this. He was like, I'm starting an eBay store. I'm like, all right, that's good. Like, good for you, right? Like, he's getting his little capitalist hat on, right? He's doing his little business thing, right? And then within about 3 weeks of doing the eBay store, we're having a conversation and he's telling me why he thinks it's okay that Jeff Bezos don't have to pay any taxes. Right?
Oh, like, I'm like,
wow. No, it's been 3 weeks, you've got a little eBay store. What it told me is that the system gives you enough crumbs that you start thinking that one day it's going to be you. Like, even me, who has a business. You start thinking, well, I've got to protect these rich people and their tax rates because I'm going to get there one day.
Yeah.
And it's a delusion. Like, it's a fantasy. It's a fantasy. Like, even me, who has a relatively successful business with employees now, like, even I know that the likelihood of me becoming Jeff Bezos is zero to none, right? And I know you people are listening. There's going to be the super positive people listening to this thinking, no, Michael, you've got to speak
that's
it to
your
the universe.
Zero to none by Michael Bouquet.
Zero to average, all right? That's my textbook, right? And there's going to be a lot of positive people saying, don't speak, you know, you can't speak that into existence. You're blocking your blessings. You got to say that you can be this person. No, I'm just talking about statistical reality. Yeah, most likely. Most business owners are not going to be Jeff Bezos. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? And I don't even necessarily have the biggest problem with Jeff if he paid his taxes and paid his workers okay, right? But I think, it's just amazing how much the system can give certain people enough crumbs that they start thinking that they're going to make it in that way. And that sure that rich people don't pay taxes is in their best interest. I'm like, bro, you're thoroughly working to middle class. Like, what are you talking about? Anyways.
Can you argue that capitalism makes us so narrowly self-interested that we actually lose sight of the bigger picture? And I think, you know, it's that scarcity mindset as well.
Yeah, it does. I think it has you focus on your own self-interest, one.
Yeah.
But two, you know, Western capitalist societies, they're not the worst societies in the world. They give you something. They give you enough of a rope to kind of feel like you're almost there. You see what I'm saying? And you can visualize yourself being there. And then you turn on the TV and you see people who look just like you or who are similar to you with the money, with the TV, with the whatever, or not TV, with the car, whatever, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's got TV now, theoretically. But and that is enough. That's enticing enough for you to think, well, I don't want to destroy that, you know, what rich people have because I'm going to get there one day. I think there's a quote where somebody said that the reason why socialism never took root in America is because there's no one poor here. They're just temporarily embarrassed millionaires. So like, it's like, I'm going to get there, but have it on me right now. So don't hurt the rich people because that's going to be me one day.
Yeah. Do you know what we need?
Gone.
We need a poor revolt. We need some ugly, drag them out on the streets, set stuff on fire. People too comfortable now. That's the problem. Netflix, opium of the masses. Like, we need to get people out on the streets. We need to make rich people afraid. We need to make them afraid. We need to make them know that if they don't pay tax, we're coming for them. We're coming for them.
I can't endorse that because that's going to be me soon, isn't it? Don't throw me out of the house. I'm going to make it real soon. You know what I'm saying? No, I'm joking. I'm playing. So in the more predictable story of the week, Quibi has are you subscribed to Quibi? Do you have Quibi right now?
So Quibi, I did not. I had a 3-month free subscription. Gonna put it out there. Got my 3 months free. I did not pay for that. I did not pay for that. No.
Sure, let's explain what it is. So it's basically the streaming service that started for 6 months ago, and it was a Netflix competitor, and their hypothesis
was mobile first
and short form. So 10-minute video clips, basically.
Vertical but highly videos.
Produced. Yeah. Yeah. So highly produced, big celebrities, basically Netflix for your phone, but 10 minutes. And they raised and spent over almost $2 billion, insane, in 6 months.
Oof.
And they've gone bust. Now,
419.
Should we give... It might as well have been. Listen, you know what? Listen, of course, the usual rhetoric of like, that $2 billion worth of capital, how many underrepresented founders could have used that capital? Like, and then there's some people that said, no, they had to shoot for the moon and try it. The founders were actually relatively quite old. I don't want to be ageist, but they were basically like...
Ex-Disney, like serious OGs of the media world.
Yeah, and they are essentially meant to know what Gen Z and millennials like, and they're nowhere near that demographic, right? And I mean, I'm not being ageist. I think elderly people have the right to start whatever company they want. But it's like, can we just be a bit more realistic here? Why do you necessarily assume that you have the insight about what young people want, right? It just, that kind of stuff irks me, because it's part of the reason why I'm like, if you want to build a community for black women, you should have black women there. If you're trying to build a community for young people, you should have younger people running the company. It doesn't make any sense to me. Anyways.
Do you watch any of their content?
You know what? Only after they shut down was I seeing stuff that I wanted to look at, because they got one documentary about the founder of American Apparel, who was basically a really bad person. He was a very charismatic founder, but he was sexually abusing employees.
Yeah, he was a creep.
Yeah, he was a creep, right? But
so
his story fascinated me. No, I didn't, but I was considering to watch it. I only realized it was a creep.
Okay, so I actually watched it. I actually watched their content. And they had a really entertaining show with Nicole Richie. I mean, it was, you know, not perfect, but it was pretty funny. Anna Kendrick also had like a pretty funny show with the guy that created Rick and Morty. What I really want to know is they basically put all their bets that people wanted vertical optimized video content. And I think they forgot that you can just turn your phone on its side and watch things. No, seriously, like, I'm not lying, because it's like, there were so many times where like the cut was just set up, like, you know, the shot, sorry, was just set up in this way that like, it was just like, they just had to force that vertical aesthetic. Do you know what I mean? And you're just like,
yeah,
it just doesn't lend itself to storytelling. Like, you need width, you need that landscape view. And there are so many times where you're like, this is a really awkward shot, but they're obviously trying to like get multiple characters in for the dialogue, and it just didn't work. So I just think like whoever out there was like, this is the future, was not watching stuff on their mobile. No way. Because it's like, dude, just turn it on its side. Like, take the screen lock off, turn it on its side.
But it's like, that is an old person's interpretation of what a young person would want. But you can imagine like an older person being like, oh, this is what young people want. They all want to be optimized for their phone. And like you said, they don't realize that people's actual behavior is just turn your phone to the side, right? One thing I do think was actually, I think somebody will nail it. I do feel short form content will work. Sometimes I'll turn on Netflix and there'll be a documentary that interests me, and I'm like, you guys have stretched this out. Don't stretch this out, guys. Mm. There was a documentary on the Challenger spacecraft explosion in the 80s. And I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And I was like, 5-part series? Guys, like, can we just make this like a 1-hour thing? Like, or just like, it's too
don't
long.
Long it
it's
out.
Too long. Yeah, don't long it out, because Netflix is primed towards keeping you on board. Netflix wants to keep you watching as long as possible. So I'm like, you're obviously stretching out a very thin subject. So short form content may work, but it's not going to be Quibi. And yeah, it's just, I don't know, everything that we know about entrepreneurship, like the lean startup, test, iterate, MVP, you know, experiment and then see what works, then adapt. They did everything the wrong way. They completely ignored all of the literature, all of the kind of understandings that have been built up about entrepreneurship in the last 10 years, right? And they just said, F it, we're going to go big and go home, because we are super experienced corporate execs and, you know, we deserve to try this. I don't know.
Wow, 419, I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, shout out to Quibi, man. I mean, at least they tried. So there is actually a personal connection that we have to the story. So we were actually individually
investors.
Reached out.
No,
We turn off your podcast right now if we were investors in Quibi. We were approached about potentially doing co-hosting or hosting individually, either myself or Abadesi or together, right? And, you know, it seemed like an exciting opportunity. It all seemed pretty clever. They had partnered with a pretty established media company. So I was like, all right, cool, let's look into this. And they were like, well, you've got to move to the States. If this goes goes down, you got to move like 3 months, 4 months, whatever, whatever. And let me tell you, yeah, if I moved to the States and left, you know, my girl, my family, everything, yeah, and this show never came out because the company shut down, oh, I'm throwing, I'm going into the building as I'm throwing some chairs. I'm like, let's release this. I swear to you. And like, yes, I do feel for the content creators. Like, you never really think about it from that vantage point when you're just a consumer. But like, we literally could have gone to the States and left our homes and whatever and uprooted our lives for a show that may never have come out. So yeah, that's our personal connection to Quibi. Crazy. There was a company that a lot of people wrote off, and it seems now that it's doing a little comeback. I may have wrote them off actually, and it was Snap. So if you remember back in 2017, you know, I read a great article about this. They called it the most egregious ripoff in corporate history, IG stories. So obviously, we all recollect.
Shameless.
Instagram and Facebook essentially stole the kind of stories feature. That was kind of Snap's killer feature. That was where all their growth was coming from. They saw a decline in user growth. Then they tried spectacles. That flopped. Their stock price dropped. But obviously this year, I think because of the pandemic and everyone being at home and just like viewing content on their phone so much, their revenue's gone up. And I think they've tried a few new products that have really worked. The Snapkit, I think there are lots of integrations that are really cool that are working. And I read a crazy stat where I think something like 70% of all like 18 to like certain, you know, 25 or 30 year olds are using Snap or are on Snap. So they've kind of carved out a niche. They've got their kind of young demographic, and it's not a user base as big as Facebook, but it's kind of working for them. Their stock's gone back up again. And does it kind of show, listen, don't ever write nobody off, like they can still come back? Do you still use Snap?
I don't use it as much as I used to. I like Bitmoji, but then they ripped off Bitmoji as well with the Memoji, didn't they? Apple came along and we're like, oh, I can do that too.
We'll take that.
But yeah, I've always wanted a pair of spectacles, actually. I thought they were pretty like fun. I think they're pretty cool. I never wrote them off because I think I also acknowledge the fact that like I'm just old. And, you know, just because I've moved on doesn't mean other people have moved on. I see the young folks using it. I see them, some of the people I mentor. So I just knew like there was some part of it that would always remain true to them. I mean, the last time I went on it, I was like, okay, they've got this content play. There's channels on there now. There was a lot more stuff than the last time I went on there. I just generally don't use social media like that much. Like for me, social media is like less about entertainment and enjoyment and more about like it's part of my job, so I'm on here. I feel like my relationship with social media has changed a lot, but I think it's great to see this. I mean, it is definitely a really good illustration of the importance of defensibility. I think a lot of the time people are like, you know, especially people who are interested in like the VC space or stuff like that, maybe you're a scout, maybe you're an aspiring VC or just angel investor, you're going to hear a lot of people critique a founder's pitch by saying, oh, where's the defensibility of this product?
Yeah, where's the moat? Yeah,
you know, exactly, where's the moat? And I think, you know, that what was the word, egregious ripoff, really good example of like that danger of not having a moat, because, you know, wow, what a decline. But credit to the ingenuity of their team, Evan Spiegel, everyone. You know, I think it was really smart to open up the Snapkit and get folks just to start developing on their platform. That's kind of how Bitmoji started, but all these other incredible integrations. So yeah, I just think it's a testament to the talent in their team.
I rate it because, listen, it's oftentimes you're up against a much more well-funded competitor, a larger competitor with a larger market share. And it's oftentimes easy, it's easy to be defeatist and be like, they've cloned us, they've ripped us off, we're done, right? But if you kind of stick to your guns and just stick to what's working with you and cater towards your user base, they have got a dedicated audience of young people that love their app. Like, I remember working, I think when I was at the Future Startup Now thing with you, and all the young people were using Snap. Like, that's their messaging app of choice, right? They might not necessarily want to use WhatsApp or Instagram DM or Messenger or whatever, right? They're glued into that ecosystem. So I think they just rode with their kind of user base and built features for them, and it's worked. And I take inspiration from that as a founder, because oftentimes I'm against much more well-funded, larger companies, and it's easy to give up. It's easy to be like, well, we're done. So shout out to Snap for coming back.
Also, 62 billion market cap. That ain't too shabby.
That ain't too shabby at all. Not too bad.
Ooh, wow. Big news in the startup world. Ryan Hoover, CEO and founder of Product Hunt, announced he is stepping away from the company after 7 years. It's pretty crazy. Y'all know I used to work at Product Hunt as well. I just feel like it's definitely a company that's kind of synonymous with his name. Also synonymous with the kitty mascot. So it's a cute mascot. But yeah, it's big news. But really happy for him. If you don't know, Ryan's also been running the Weekend Fund for the last few years, investing in early stage startups. A lot of interesting focuses from future of work to community-based businesses. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens. But yeah, it was kind of interesting to hear his incredibly personal reflection on his journey as a founder. You know, for him, he said that he just got to this point where he realized that he didn't enjoy it anymore. It just wasn't bringing him the joy and fulfillment that it had in the past. And that for him was the sign that it was time to find a new CEO and move on. Mike, what do you think? Are you gonna get there one day? Can you envisage a point where it's just like this company you've created is no longer the thing that you want to spend most of your time working on?
Absolutely. I think everybody reaches that stage of burnout. I think Ryan did 7 years. I'm on my fifth year. I do think it's different slightly, like I said to you, in the sense that he sold his company. And I think once you sell a company, people don't want to acknowledge it, but I think the spark does kind of go out of it because you're kind of pushing towards something, some kind of event horizon, whether that's an IPO or an exit or, you know, whatever it may be. And once that's happened, it's like, well, what are we fighting for next? What's the next kind of mission? And I think, yeah, 7 years is enough. But yeah, shout out to him. I commend him for the work he's done. I think he is a pioneer in the extent that you know the founders that were kind of based off Product Hunt. So you look at Indie Hackers, like you can see that the inspiration from Product Hunt there. You look at what Levels does with Nomadlist, the inspiration from Product Hunt there. So many other companies that are like, you know, launched on Product Hunt. We launched, Pocket launched on Product Hunt as well.
Oh yeah, represent. So, I've launched all the things on Product Hunt. Yeah.
Yeah. So
it's a legacy. It's a very, very powerful legacy to leave behind for sure. And like, it'll be cool to see what happens next.
I think the best kind of company to have is when you're kind of empowering others. Like, it's one thing to have a company where you're like, okay, we've got a SaaS tool that helps people like, you know, organize their time better. That's great. Whatever. Right. Oh, but when it's like, we're helping others. But that wasn't that anyone personally, it's just a generic thing to say. But when you've got a platform that essentially enables others to chase their dreams,
yeah,
that's kind of special. Like, and if especially if you've done it for such a long time where like thousands of people have chased their dream because of you, like shout out to that. That's a wonderful thing. I aspire to that kind of level of impact.
That's true. Respect. Yeah.
Respect to Ryan, shout out to him. He was actually a guest of ours, one of our first guests actually on the pod. So if you want to scroll back and listen, have a listen. Episode, like first 10 episodes is on there. Shout out to Ryan.
I thought you were actually going to drop the number for a second. I was like, this guy's techish knowledge is high.
Techish fans are hardworking. They'll do the research. Just Google it. Ryan,
we had to stop numbering the episodes a while back for technical reasons.
So speaking on politics, just a quick story. AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, the representative she was drumming up support for Joe Biden. She was on Twitch. So she was the first American politician to ever go on Twitch, and she managed to garner 400,000 concurrent streams simultaneously playing the game Among Us. I'm feeling like such an old person right now because I've never played Twitch. I haven't had a video console in like years, but apparently this is what the young people are doing, right?
And the young folks, yeah, like, tell us all about it.
Yeah, tell us all about it. We need to get a young Gen Z
just
person
on
this
podcast. Just because we're not gamers, by the way. Like, I have friends that are on Twitch all the time. It's just because we're also not gamers. We're lame.
Yeah, we're two type A personalities always working. But yeah, so shout out to her. I think it's like, you got to go to where your people are, you know.
Feel
rule
you.
Number one in business and marketing, go to where the tribe is. If you're trying to get young people to vote, go where they at.
Can I just say, like, are there any trends that this incredible woman is not setting? Is there any place that she won't go? I mean, what a pioneer, what a hero of our time, this woman. I mean, come on, America, just put her in charge. What are you waiting for? Like, how long will it be till I can vote for her as president? That's what I want to see. Like,
do you think she'll run one day?
I hope so. I really hope so. I think the fact that someone as incredible as her is like out there shows us just how backward and oppressive that system is against women of color. She just appears to be infinitely more qualified than so many people in power right now. And the way she's able to leverage technology, connect with people, everyone's saying like, oh, young people don't vote. Oh, young people don't care about politics. Hello, look at the conversations she's sparking online. Look at the engagement she's getting online. It's not politics that people are disengaged from. It's the politicians. They're boring.
Absolutely. And I also think policies, I think there's a lot of talk about like, oh, young people don't vote because they're dumb. But also it's just like a lot of young people are just like, they don't understand what they get from it. And they listen to AOC and she talks about free, you know, college, talks about free healthcare, and people can understand and resonate with that. I don't think if AOC was, you know, as young and as charismatic as she is now, but she was talking about some, you know, like put yourself up by the bootstraps and if you just work hard, you can make it. And like the system is great. I don't think she would be as popular and successful as she is now. I think it's a combination of who she is, her background, her charisma, and also what she's saying. So shout out to her. So, you know, on TechEdge, we always talk about big tech and, you know, are they encroaching too far? And DOJ, the Department of Justice, has finally launched an antitrust file against Google of all companies. And this is the first kind of case of this level since Microsoft back in 97. Now, essentially, the case against them is that they are being anti-competitive in the sense that Google is the default search engine on all Android phones. And if you want to kind of build an Android phone, you need to do that. Google won't allow you to do that otherwise. They pay Apple billions of dollars a year to ensure that Google is the default search engine on iPhones. Like when you go to Safari and you search something in the browser, that's Google by default. And Google pays Apple for that right. And is that totally fair? It probably isn't, right? Because if you're DuckDuckGo and you're trying to get a foothold into the search market, listen, it's one thing to say Google's a better search engine. It probably is. It's one thing to say that. Like, that's competing, you know, person on person with, you know, a rival product. And if the product gives you better results, great. But is it fair to compete when someone is taking their profits and paying for the right to be default on a platform that 20% of the population uses and then Android, the rest of the 80%, right? I don't think it is. And I think that's a valid interception. I don't know whether they will actually block them and break and tell them not to do that, but at least it will make Google think twice about the kind of practices they're doing. DuckDuckGo has obviously come out and said they're very happy with this, and so is Yelp. Do you remember Yelp, Abba? Do you remember Yelp?
Yelp in the mix. Yelp in the mix.
Because Yelp has been the OG of like, please help us. Google is strangling us. Because essentially, you used to Google, you know, restaurants in my area, and you might see a Yelp result. Now you don't even, you got to scroll all the way down to see that Google comes up. They pre-populate with their own search results. They claim it's for the benefit of the consumer. Maybe it is, right? But it is anti-competitive. Like, should Google be allowed to show their own products like as the first result? I don't know. Especially considering it's the gateway to the internet.
I just think it's too little too late, if I'm honest. I mean, 90% of all internet searches happen on Google. So even if they go ahead and do this, as you say, they've like completely controlled the search results so that all of their pages and the pages that they can profit from appear on page one. There's all this research, like, so Google control like 90% of search results, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And then 90% of people do not go past page one. In fact, mm-hmm. like the majority of people don't even scroll. They're just like...
Yeah. Yeah, they don't scroll,
top hit. So what do you do when that is the reality of our system? Like, I just don't think this is going to unfortunately change anything.
What would be your opinion on if they said, listen, Apple can no longer just have a default search engine and be paid for that right? And then all of a sudden Apple says, you know what, we're going to acquire DuckDuckGo. So when you get an Apple phone, you've got to search with DuckDuckGo. And if you want Google, you've got to install that yourself manually. Or if they say that actually YouTube's got a spin-off. So I think a lot of searches are just YouTube searches, right? That people do. So if they start doing stuff like that, forcing them to break up and then also making it so they're not as entrenched in mobile devices, that might have an impact. No,
I think that could have an impact. I also think that we as a society need to be willing to not have, like, we need to change our relationship to search, because Google has spoiled us and it's also socialized us. Like, Google has determined how we behave in the context of online searches now. So we've become very lazy and, you know, we're clicking the first hit. It's not always the most accurate one, but this is the behavior we're now addicted to. And I think DuckDuckGo is a different experience. Let's be honest, right?
Hey everyone, we are proud to announce the all-in-one workspace Notion is this week's sponsor of Techish.
This pandemic has fast-forwarded us to a remote-first working world. And in this brave new world, there are a few startups set to have more of an impact this next decade on the way we work than Notion.
If you haven't used it before, Notion is an all-in-one tool to get your entire team or company to get organized with project management, wikis, and documents, all fully customizable. You can also use it for your own notes and tasks. In all honesty, if I wasn't silly enough to want to be an entrepreneur, I'd love to work on a product that was at the intersection of beautiful design and utility, and that's Notion to a T.
Lucky for you, they are currently hiring. So if you are looking to join a fast-growing team, or if you're looking for a career change, they've got roles open across engineering, marketing, community, operations, and more. Go to www.notion.so/careers and get applying. Link in the show notes as well.
Yo everyone, thanks for listening. This is the outro, but before I exit, I want to read out some dope reviews. So here's one that I like.
I'm exiting too.
A much needed perspective on... let me read the reviews, Abba. Come on, man. A much needed perspective on the tech scene. This is a fantastic view on what's happening in the tech scene. Abba, Desi and Michael have a great dynamic. Each episode always goes to the top of my listings when it drops. And that is from KZA or the Kizza, if she's part of the Wu-Tang clan. I don't know. Via Apple Podcasts in the UK. Another one said, love you guys. A+, keep the pods coming. I love the international news coverage. And that's from Mike JE1. I don't know how to say that. I'm sorry. But yeah, shout out to everyone that's leaving reviews. Really appreciate it. And someone left the review, Baza, based in the States. I'm not going to read the whole review because it's long, but the last part in it says, it's probably the coolest podcast in the world right now. Fam, are you checking it? We are the coolest podcast in the world right now. How do you feel about that?
I didn't write that. I didn't pay him to write that. It's just the truth. And the truth cannot be denied.
There we go. All right, cool. Anything you want to say in closing?
Well, I was just going to thank everybody for listening and remind them to please use hashtag techish to join the conversation. What did you think about today's episode? What are your thoughts on everything? What should we be talking about next? And if you want to work with me, get in touch because Brandwatch is hiring.
Cool. Ciao. Peace.